This is HPC Wire Week in Review, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry, with Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, general manager of Tabor Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Hi, I'd like to thank everybody for joining us on our show today. I'm Michael Feldman, editor at HPC Wire. Addison Snell joins us at Tabor Research. How are you, Addison?
Hey, I'm good today. Thanks, Michael.
Great. Well, let's jump right in. There's a lot of news this week. There's a lot of big stories. I guess the biggest story this week might have been the Sun and Oracle announcement. Sun apparently is going to be acquired by Oracle. It's probably one of the biggest acquisitions of the 21st century. What do you think about all this, Addison?
Well, you know, it's interesting because we just went through this similarly with SGI and Rackable, although with Sun has got a little bit more market share than SGI, and there's potentially a bigger actual impact on the HPC industry, although SGI has the heritage. But, you know, with SGI and now Sun, you've got these companies that have been on these similar trajectories, and now we're looking at what the impact is going to be on the HPC industry. But, you know, what I'm really concerned about in this case is that Oracle is a software company, and they've said very clearly that this deal is about software, that it's about Java, and it's about Solaris. And Oracle going into the systems business is not at all the same as when Cisco went into the systems business, because Cisco is used to building things and manufacturing things. Oracle is not a hardware company, and now they're going to be potentially not just selling but manufacturing servers and chips and storage and interconnects. And Oracle doesn't have experience with manufacturing or inventory or parts shortages or work in process or other kinds of operations issues like that. And if Oracle stays with Sun in the HPC business, you have additional complications like, you know, MTBF calculations and burn-in and acceptance tests. So Oracle, as they evaluate these different hardware lines of business, is going to have to be very choosy about which markets they stay in and which markets they get rid of. And one option for Oracle is that they could wind up selling off some of these hardware pieces. So, you know, Sun's HPC roadmap is in doubt, and no one at Sun really knows yet what's going to happen with the HPC business, which is fascinating when you consider they're still rolling out new products. They've got a whole new HPC storage strategy in particular. What do you think?
No, I think those are great points. Not only, and your point about Oracle being a software company is dead on. Not only are they a software company, they're a database software company, which is only tangentially related to HPC. Yeah, I mean, it seems like a hard fit for the HPC side of Sun to me. I guess the way I look at it, the big question is, does Oracle want to be like IBM? Does it want to be a software services and hardware company that spans the whole range of IT? Or does it just want to be Oracle with hardware and then Java and Solaris? If it's the latter, I don't see much of a future for HPC at this company. And so far, I don't think we've seen anything that would make me believe otherwise. I mean, Oracle hasn't said a whole lot yet, obviously, since, you know, they haven't closed the deal yet, and they can't say that much. But from what they've said up till now, it's all about bases and building database appliances and leveraging, you know, Sun's IP to do that. So I guess I'm a little skeptical about what's going to happen to the HPC side of Sun. The other thing I was thinking about is you know, how profitable is the HPC business at Sun? If it's not profitable, if they see this as just a losing proposition, what kind of motivation are they going to have to pull this into the new company? I mean, there might be some things they're interested in, like the InfiniBand technology, since Oracle has pulled some of that technology into some of their database machines. But for the most part, it's hard to see them being interested in, like, building, you know, a TAC-style supercomputer built by Oracle. It's just kind of hard to imagine.
Yeah, you make a good point with InfiniBand, and Sun has been one of the companies that's pioneered the use of InfiniBand, not only with very large system interconnects like the Magnum switch on the TAC interconnect, but also the integration of InfiniBand in their original Thumper product into storage. And storage, again, where they're making these new announcements, is an area in which Sun has shown some innovation in HPC. It's just a question of how they're going to go forward with it, which is interesting in the light of one of the other technologies they've been bringing into storage with flash memory as a storage device, and that's one of the other stories that's been in the news this week. What do you make of flash memory in HPC and the expansion announcement this week?
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, flash is, I was thinking that's going to be a big story this year. And like you said, Sun just announced some products around that. And Expansion came out this week with an announcement. They're using a totally different type of technology than most of the other vendors. They're using NOR flash, not the NAND flash. But it's, I think flash memory in servers is going to be a big story this year, but maybe not as big as it was when I thought about it last year, since I think the whole industry has been slowing down. I think the deployment in servers is not going to be quite as rapid as I thought. But to me, it's sort of a can't-miss technology. The performance gap between memory and disk is huge. It's getting bigger, and there's got to be some storage layer between those two to make to sort of fill that gap. And flash memory is it. Now, whether that happens with flash cards or SSDs or some other type of arrangement, I think that's still up for grabs. But I don't see anything really stopping flash memory from being deployed. And HPC is one area where I think, it's going to show up, if not first, then one of the first things. There's not much deployment right now. That's why the expansion story was kind of interesting to me, because they immediately announced that the Stanford Research Group had deployed some of their flash technology and done some pretty interesting work with some oil and gas. Expansion is kind of interesting, and right now they're in Chapter 11, and here they are. They're announcing products in the midst of bankruptcy, which I thought was kind of interesting. But obviously they're high on this technology. It's called EcoRAM. And, the person I talked to there, Jan Silverman, who used to work at Cray, they sound like they're very committed to it. And all the big vendors are supposedly trying this out on their machines, and they're hoping to get a lot of uptake on this. But it's a different kind of technology than most of the other flash players. Most of the other guys are using NAND flash of one sort or another, and that has a different set of issues and a different set of technology limitations than NOR flash, but they're all going after sort of the same problem, in that, memory's fast, disk is slow, and the gap is too big. So I think we're going to see a lot of interesting product technology coming out over the next year or two. I just wonder sort of how the economic downturn is going to play into this as far as how fast it's going to be accepted by the market.
Well, you make a good point with the economic downturn, is that sometimes that can slow down the adoption of new technologies because people are less likely to take a flyer on an unproven technology. But, the points you're making about flash and performance, in this case, although price performance is always the primary consideration in HPC, I think it's not the only one in this case, because in the ultra scale and supercomputer markets, it's not just about the performance here, but also the fact that fewer moving parts means fewer potentials for failures. Disk failures are a very big problem in these ultra scale environments, and that's another potential benefit as the technology matures that flash could bring into the ultra-scale environments, especially the big data edge HPC environments for places like Google or Yahoo or eBay or Amazon that are looking at these very wide-scale deployments in edge HPC. There is a lot of interest here, you're right, and we did a study on data management in HPC and found that over half the market, over half the users in our study, were either implementing or investigating solid-state disk in one form or another. And I'm glad you got Jan's name in there, because I've worked with him before and respect him a lot. So, I like it, and I think it's an interesting product, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it gets deployed.
Yeah, your point about the disk problems, I think we have to also remember, SSDs is such a new technology, and it's got its own problems as far as robustness. There's vendors out there promising different lifetimes for these systems, and it's not like it's going to fail like a disk, like in the middle of a run, it's just going to crash. crash, but the issues of lifetime and wear leveling are really there. I think, you know, there's no perfect memory technology out there. There's no perfect storage technology. But SSDs, they have their limitations. I think it's going to take a while for people to sort of get used to the limitations of this storage technology versus versus disk, because there's definitely some issues there that people are going to have to deal with. I was talking to Panasonic this week, and they came out with their new top-of-the-line system, which integrated SSD technologies into their storage unit. And they actually put it in their blade, and it's just one of the layers in there. They have a three-tier technology with RAM at the top, and then SSD, and then the disk, and they put it in such a proportion that they think they've got optimal sort of price performance out of it. But there's not much experience out there yet with SSD technology, and I wonder how long it's going to take until people get used to sort of how this is going to play, you know, how the storage is going to last compared to just a typical traditional SATA disk or SAS disk.
Those are all good points. You know, we're talking about roadmaps. The other big roadmap in the news this week was AMD. You know, they've got a new roadmap. We've been talking about these companies that are operating while they're struggling. AMD's not in bankruptcy, but they did also post their 10th consecutive quarterly loss earlier this week, and they've got a new roadmap. You know, what do you think here, Michael?
Yeah, I took a look at the roadmap. I kind of like it. I think AMD's there to shake up the x86 market to that extent. I think they've done it. They've come up and they've sort of gone in a different direction. They've made two platforms for their servers now, starting in 2010, and I think that's a good thing. They're looking at multi-core differently. There's going to be more of a diversification of the number of cores in these systems coming out in a couple of years. And so they split the server platform into two, and I think that's probably a good idea. I sort of wonder what Intel is going to do in response, but for now, I kind of like what AMD's doing. They look more nimble now than they did a year ago. Of course, last year, they made a lot of mistakes, obviously, but you know, they've gone through a lot of changes. They cast off their foundries into a separate company. You know, they've laid off a lot of people, obviously. They've restructured a lot. I kind of like their roadmap now. They've got, looks like, some good products coming out. They just announced they were going to push out their 6-core Istanbul chip a little bit early, I think maybe 3-4 months early. It's going to come out, I think, to paying customers next month, and then it'll start showing up in systems in June, which is good, because Intel just recently released their Nehalem EP chips, and that's now considered the top chip. But with Istanbul coming on the market, it's going to be a little more interesting now. I think AMD looks a little more revived. It didn't have a great quarter, obviously. I think they lost something like $400 million the last quarter, which is not great.
You've made some good points that they made some mistakes, right? And this is around the time they started to slip. A couple of years ago, they were actually out-shipping Intel into the HPC market for about for at least 4 straight quarters. Now, the good news, if you're AMD, is that you know, we've seen that HPC users are fickle, and the area in which they're most fickle, in which they show the least loyalty, is in their processor vendor. They will flip to the processor that they find has the best price performance or the best performance for their operating and facilities budgets for their application. So absolutely, AMD has the opportunity to come back if their roadmap is there and if they can get over some of the operational missteps they've made over the last 2 years.
I think they've come to the conclusion that they can't outrun Intel on silicon. I wrote about this a little bit this week, but they can go back to what they did basically 3 years ago and sort of out-engineer Intel at more the system level, and that's what I think they're going to try and do. Intel's probably a year ahead of them on silicon technology, maybe 6 months now, hard to say, but that's not the whole story with chips and basically, to the end users, they want good systems. So if AMD can start delivering chips that OEMs like and then that the customers like, you know, it's not going to matter too much that Intel's on 45 nanometers or 32 nanometers versus, you know, the previous node for AMD. You know, AMD could have a better story nonetheless. I think the overall health of that company, though, won't really depend upon what they do with HPC. It's going to depend upon, I guess, the consumer market. And the outlook there, of course, is still a big question mark. Nobody knows when consumers are going to start buying again. So for AMD and for Intel, for that matter, it's still pretty muddy.
a good point that it relies on the consumer market for the business overall and not HPC. But let's not forget the other area in which Intel's been ahead of AMD in HPC is not just on the silicon, but in the software, in the compilers and tools and middleware stack. Intel Cluster Ready is, you know, even if it's not the be-all and end-all for all HPC users, it's a significant step in making it more straightforward for users to configure predictable clusters. And this is a big challenge in a lot of the mid-range especially, and Intel has a sizable lead over AMD there.
Yeah, that's a good point. I haven't been following the Intel cluster story as much. Are you finding that a lot of OEMs are picking up on this and are finding this of real use?
They've had increasing participation from both hardware and software partners. I think it's still early in the game to determine where all of the benefits are in integrating the complete middleware layer, but Intel has a significant head start, and it's a trend that we were looking for, and Intel is taking the lead there. So I think it is significant.
You know, the other side of the Intel software story is they make compilers and runtimes and libraries, and that part of their company, they actually ship products that are AMD compatible. So in a sense, that group is actually helping both companies. I mean, their customers expect those products to work on both platforms. So those guys work pretty hard to get them to be compatible. Now, there's not as much as compatibility issues as you might think from two different architectures, but they do have to deliver that functionality into their product set. So Intel, in a way, is helping the whole ecosystem there, and I'm sort of glad to see it, and I'm glad their customers sort of insist upon that. I think overall, the x86 customer base does not want to see AMD fail. Everybody wants to see both of these companies succeed. They like the competition. They like playing each other off each other. And like you brought out, HPC users, you know, they're going to pick the chip that they think does the best job for them, so they want to see the competition. The ecosystem is better served by both these guys being healthy.
You know, it's an interesting thread that's run through all of our topics today. We've been talking about companies that, have been struggling in one way or another and yet are still pushing out innovation in a lot of different areas. And in fact, one closing thought at the start of the podcast, we made reference to SGI. It's important to note that deal with Rackable isn't necessarily done yet. They're in a waiting period when other companies could show up and still make bids on those assets. So that'll be very interesting to watch over the next couple of weeks, see whether anyone else enters that auction period for SGI's assets.
Yeah, I think that will be interesting. Frankly, I don't suspect anybody to actually pick up a bid on SGI at this point. I think Rackable probably did a lot of front-end work to make sure they knew what they were getting into, and I have a feeling for somebody to come in now and do that would be really tough.
I don't know. It's only $25 million, Michael. You and I could hit the ATM. What do you say? You want to buy anything
true.
In SGI?
Let me think about it.
Sounds great.
Sounds great, Addison. Thanks so much for joining us today. It was a great week to talk about the news, a great, exciting week in HPC. I hope they can all be like this. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Michael.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Week in Review with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Download this podcast every Friday afternoon at www.hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.